of the hymns. And let me give you a little bit of a sketch of a background on one of them tonight. You can identify so much better with them if you know what stage of the Christian life the person was in when they wrote it. It was a man named John Newton who was born into a family that had sold him to a black mistress. And he was raised in Africa under her and very, very much mistreated, and decided that when he grew up, he would be one of the biggest slave owners in the world. And he would mistreat his slaves as much as he possibly could. And the interesting thing about that is when he got his freedom, he became the biggest slave owner in the world. And then one day, heard the gospel and became a believer and wrote a hymn. Does anyone know it? Number 385. No, not 485. 385. Which gives an interesting background for a man who came to know Christ and whose life was so dramatically changed by it. And you recognize it as one of our most common hymns, Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound, which is a beautiful example of how far a man can come when he comes to know Christ. What's the one? I'm talking with someone tonight about it. What's the one we're talking about tonight? No. It is well with my soul. What number is that? 271? You can read these words, and if you read the words, realizing what had happened to the person that wrote these words and wrote the hymn, then you get a lot more meaning from it. When peace, notice you got so many river and ocean metaphors in it. When peace like a river attends my ways, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot that was taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Does it give you any, well, you've got the fourth stanza, O Lord, haste the day when faith shall be sight, the clouds roll back like a scroll, and you've got the sea billows and so forth. Does it help to understand a little bit about what the meaning of this is, if you would know that this hymn was written when the author received news that his family, who had been at sea, had all been lost in storm? And that gives some background for it to see how beautifully this believer took doctrine and made application of it. And there are many, many interesting stories like that. So I think maybe to try and help us to appreciate some of what some of these things come out of. They're real life situations. I think we often think about a guy sat down in a studio with a piano and wrote a hymn. And most of them do not come out of that. They come out of believers in very often tense, tragic situations in life, learning to apply doctrine, and literally music wells up in their souls, and they'll write a song, many of which contain very, very beautiful expressions of doctrine. All right, tonight we're ready to start with the man of strife, which we did begin this morning in the book of Proverbs. The man of strife, and we said that the word strife itself occurs 19 times in all of the Old Testament, and 15 of them are in the book of Proverbs. And so we have a very, very clear teaching in the book of Proverbs about this kind of person. And we gave four synonyms for it. One who creates strife is a person who creates an argument, a person who creates and causes conflict, a person who causes quarrels. We'll probably be using the word quarrels this most tonight, and a person of dispute. We have people, as you probably well know, that hear our studies here over tape in different places, and there's one of the tape classes I went to was in California just recently, 4 months ago, and a couple of the members of that class have wandered thus far. Bill and Jan Crivola, I know you like to stand up. That's why you got on the second row. Raise your hands. Okay, you might want to meet them afterwards. They have had the misfortune over how long? 6 years of hearing tapes. Also, another interesting thing this week, we found out that the Volition series that was done, a year ago, has gone exceptionally well in Vienna, Austria. Where a class is using them on a regular basis over there. So when people like this pass through, so often they're in an area where the word is not being taught, and it's hard to identify with anything, and they identify only with tapes. And so if you get a chance tonight, let the people know that there are warm bodies that are involved at Beth Haven Church, and I know they appreciate the availability of them. Okay. I don't know what argument, conflict, and quarrel and dispute had to do with tapes, but nonetheless, these are all synonyms that go in with this word strife. And we noted that they're the kind of people that will use facts and partial facts only for fuel to create a quarrel. Then we looked at the nature of strife in Proverbs 17 and verse 14, and it was expressed by a simile. It's like the letting out of water. And the picture we ought to have in our mind tonight is you start with a little trickle of a quarrel. It's not big. It's not anything especially important. But we noted that trickles turn to torrents. And we noted the metaphor of a torrent is important because you can't predict how much water is coming through the dam. Once it begins to come through, the hole gets big. You can't control it. And certainly you can't go out and pick up water and retrieve it. And then we said, we're ready now tonight. And again, I'll remind you, as we did this morning, that I did not write anything in the book of Proverbs. All my job is to simply observe. And I'm glad that the lady who asked about what the other 10 were is back tonight. We'll do the best to meet her need. If you were not here this morning, we noted that of the passages in Proverbs, the 15 of them that deal with strife and argument and quarrels, that five of them are dedicated to the quarrelsome woman. And tonight we want to begin with that. And we've called it Trickles to Torrents in the Living Room. And we begin with Proverbs 21 and verse 9. And we want to make several observations under this verse. Verse 9 of chapter 21 reads, "It is better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman." And the observations we want to note is, notice first of all, this is a description of her general disposition, not her temporary state, or not occasional event. The reason we know that is because Proverbs 21:9 locks her into a title. Notice it simply calls her in verse 9 a contentious woman. And the Word of God does not label a person an angry man because he gets mad once in a while. It labels him an angry man because that is his general disposition. The Scripture does not label a person an evil man because he sins on occasion. It calls him an evil man because that's his general disposition. And in verse 9, it does not call this woman contentious woman because she engages in an occasional quarrel. This is her character. This is her general disposition. This is what she is like as a person. It also, by the way, does not mean that she has to continue this way. It describes her occasional condition, but obviously the hope of the proverb would be what? That as we read Proverbs, we would see ourselves mirrored and we would do something about it. Verse 9 certainly does not mean that she has to remain that way. She could certainly change from being a contentious woman to what? Proverbs 31, she can change and be the ideal woman. And that, of course, is the hope, that we'll honestly see ourselves in Proverbs and go about making some change. All right, the second thing about verse 9 is notice that her quarrel, this is very important, her quarrel, or quarrels, plural, are private, not public. The revelation of her disposition is private, not public. And we get that from the standpoint that verse 9 is talking about it is better to live in the corner of a roof than in a house with a contentious woman. So notice we're talking about the way she acts in private, not the way she reacts in public. Do you think you could possibly, if you are a quarrelsome person, do you think perhaps you could possibly cover it in public? if we would meet one of these women, that in her house she is very quarrelsome, but when she goes out, she's charming. Is that realistic or unrealistic? Is it possible that everyone could say, you mean her? She is a quarrelsome woman? I don't believe it. Well, I've been pastor long enough, 22 years, to know that I've heard many, many times someone say something about the person they're living with, and I say, would you say that again? Because I know them too, and I don't believe you. I think you're exaggerating. And therefore, notice that this particular woman, her contentiousness, her argumentativeness, her quarrelsomeness reveals itself not in public, but in the home. So we could say very well, she may get along quite well with people in public. However, this verse, if we can borrow that song of some years back, we're talking about behind closed doors, about the way it is in the home. So if we're going to evaluate ourselves, it's not what do people think of me, but what am I like in the home? Third, who is the one that she is argumentative with? Every person she meets? No, it's the person that lives with her. So the third observation is that she's argumentative with her husband. It's in the home, and it is pretty much confined to her attitude toward her husband. And so as far as her husband is concerned, she is the kind of person that is forever in conflict, having quarrels, having disputes, and having argument. We will also find out that there will be another word added to her later, is that she is just generally peeved about life. You know, it's a general undercurrent of simply recognizing that I haven't gotten perhaps the best lot in life, and I'm really peeved about it. Okay, the fourth observation, and this is important for all of our characters, she is not a freak, she's real. She is not a freak, she is real. It's easy sometimes to look at the characters in Proverbs and say, what a freak. These people aren't around. And Proverbs does not come on from that standpoint at all. It is saying we're dealing with real people and warm bodies. All right, fifth, notice this is a proverb of comparison. It's the kind it is. We recognize the comparison proverbs by the words better and by the words than. Remember, a contrast proverb we had this morning, which is setting up one situation, but it contrasts another. This is a comparison one, and if you read verse 9, you see it. It is better to live in the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. So the question is, what would be far more comfortable than living with an argumentative and quarrelsome woman? What would be better than that? And what's the answer? To live in the attic. Interesting, is it? Better to live in the attic. Now notice our verse does not talk about an attic because they did not have attics. It talks about living in the corner of a roof. Their houses, as you know, were flat roofed with, I don't know if we can draw one, I'm good at doing that, but if you're looking at the house, it'd be something like this. You'd have the entryway, and then the roof would be down below a. By the Old Testament law, you couldn't have a flat roof house where somebody could fall off of it. You had to have the roof down below the wall. It would be like putting starting a roof right about here, and then having the wall go on up all around so someone wouldn't fall off and kill himself. It was part of your liability in the Old Testament that you not do that. And obviously, you were exposed, if you're in the roof, exposed to the elements, to the rain, to the heat, and to the cold. And he simply says, I would much rather be up here in this corner, tucked away from her, isolated from the argumentation and the quarrelsomeness. It's better to be up here than it is down there. And so the emphasis, again, I'd rather be exposed to the elements than to be exposed to the woman that's described in Proverbs 21. Now, again, this is not to say that a man cannot be quarrelsome also. And we'll get into some proverbs that talk about quarrelsomeness on the part of anyone. But it is interesting that one-third of them are dedicated in Proverbs to noting out the quarrelsome woman. Okay? Incidentally, for every characteristic that might be true of a woman, characteristically, it can also be true that there is some other characteristic that is typical of a man. And therefore, when we talk about these things, we're not picking on anybody, because a woman could come back from the book of Proverbs and say, well, let's look at some of the male propensities that are there. And we've covered them, have we not, in our passage. I hope I've given equal treatment. Okay, that's so important today. Seems like in this age you have to be so good with everything you say or the wording you use that you just can't be that good. And some people have difficulty with that, even in government. Okay. Number five. Number six. Number six, notice that being quarrelsome carries a penalty. Let's put this quality carries a penalty. Great penalty. And can you see what the penalty is? The penalty is loss of companionship. And that's serious, is it not? You may say, I have every right to be quarrelsome. Okay, let's say you do. We don't, but let's say you do. But you still have to pay a penalty. And the penalty of your companionship is not going to be sought. And I can illustrate that very, very easily. Do you seek out quarrelsome friends? You know, you say, let's invite the Smiths over tonight. And your wife says, no, I'd rather have the Joneses. They're more disagreeable. We don't do that. Okay, so the first one then is Proverbs 21:9. And again, notice all the bad qualities that are found in Yes. Are you going to insist on having saying something, Floyd? Okay. Pass. Okay, second passage, Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 19. Proverbs 21:19. Now notice in this particular passage, you've got something added to the quality of being contentious that gives a little more enlightenment on what it means. Verse 19. It is better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. And the word vexing is important. The word translated vexing, and that is a good translation, nothing really wrong with that. But it is a word that is frequently used in the Old Testament to mean be angry. And it's not the kind of anger that reacts to a given situation by loss of temper. I don't mean loss of temper kind of anger. I mean the kind of anger that you're just generally in life peeved. Do we use the word peeved anymore? You recognize the word peeved? You're really hacked off with life. You know, general disposition is it doesn't birth forth in temper all the time, but you didn't get a good deal over here. And look at the shape of the slob I married, and you know, you look at him, and you know, like someone said, the most forceful proof that evolution is not true is that you just cannot believe that oversized belly in front of the TV with a beer can be the end product of a long process of evolution. And generally with these circumstances in life, there is a peeved attitude, and this is the idea. So she is quarrelsome, and she's generally peeved about life or grieved over life. Now, what is it like to live with a person who's really peeved over life? They are really vexed. And so let's add to that, this is an enormous load to carry. And we can see that this is an enormous load to carry by looking at the proverb that says it, chapter 27 and verse 3. It is a heavy thing to have to put up with. 27:3. It says, a stone is heavy and the sand is weighty. But the provocation, and it is obscure, but that's our word, provocation. But a peeved person, here it's a fool, is heavier than both of them. So he's trying to stress that this is an enormous load to have to bear when you're living with a person who's just generally angry over life. Do you know the kind of person I mean? You know, they can't really, you say, what are you angry about? And it's nothing in particular. It's just life in general, you know. It's dealt you a bad blow, and you're just generally peeved at the whole situation, though you can't really put your finger on anything. And to live with a person who is continually angry about circumstances in life is an enormous load to bear. And going back to 21:19, notice that the Solomon says, rather than do that, he would rather live in a desert. Chapter 21, verse 19. It is better to live in a desert land. Now, if on the first one it was like being on the roof, the idea of being exposed to the elements, what is the idea of desert land? What's he saying there? Well, he's simply saying it would be better to live a solitary life, separate from all of the comforts of home. Away from all of the conveniences, out in the desert, danger than to live in that circumstance. All right, number three, proverb, or third. Proverbs 19 and verse 13. Proverbs 19, 13. Now, the poor fella in this verse has got double trouble, and that's the first thing we want to note, is the double nature of this man's trouble. And so we'll simply put as our first observation on Proverbs 19:13, double trouble. Because notice he's got a bad son and a bad wife. 19:13. A foolish son is a destruction to his father, and the contentions of a wife are a constant dripping. And so notice he has a bad wife and he has a bad son. First of all, the bad son. Is the word destruction is a word that means ruination or ruin. And it is also plural. And so the emphasis is on all of the blows that come on this guy from his son. And so a foolish son is one ruination after another to his father. Again, the word destruction in Hebrew is plural. So it refers to all kinds of them. He has a foolish son and he is forever in being ruined and disgraced and embarrassed over and over again by his son. He also has a bad wife, and notice that is expressed. It says the contentions of a wife are a constant dripping. The old Moffat translation really gets at that word contentions. It doesn't translate it contentions, and notice it is plural. It is naggings. And we still use that word, naggings. And so he has a foolish son, a son who is a fool, and he has a wife who is nagging at him. The naggings of a wife are a constant constant dripping. Constant dripping, again, what is it? It's something that drives you out of your mind. Ever had a leaky shower or something like that, or a leaky faucet, and everything is dead quiet and drip, drip, and you can't get to sleep for waiting for the next drip. And it's the idea of the dripping is an annoyance, an irritation, and something that is grating, something very difficult to live with. Your standard Old Testament commentary on the Hebrew text is probably Kyle and Delitzsch, and I think we've quoted before that Delitzsch in his commentary gives a Arab proverb. I don't know where he got it. I do not know Arabic. But he said, three things make a house intolerable. And then he gives three rhyming Arabic words, tak or tak, knock, and bak. And the words mean tak, the leaking of a rain, a leaking through of a rain, knock, a wife's nagging, and bak, bugs. So three things will drive you out of your house: a leaky roof, a nagging wife, and bugs. Okay, number four. And number four we'll only read because it is similar to what we've had before, 25 and 24. Not comment on it all, but simply read it. Got the guy in the attic again. It is better to live in the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman, a nagging woman, or a argumentative woman. And then we come to Proverbs 27:15 for the end. 27:15 is a little stronger than the irritation. 27:15 implies that the rain drives you out of the house. It says a constant dripping on a day of steady rain. We're now not in a occasional drip. We are in a storm, a steady rain, a stormy day, a rainy day, and a contentious woman are alike. And the idea, basically, of the rain coming through on a filtering through the roof on a rainy day is it drives everybody out of the house. And so the nagging of the woman drives them out of the house. Okay, those are all Proverbs directed to the woman. And now we want to move into the rest of them. And so we'll move from trickles to torrents in the living room to D in our outline. What are the things that go along with contention? So let's put the companions of contention. When you see somebody that's argumentative or the quarrelsome, what are the things that go with it? We might want to put these as roots of it. They're certainly signs of it. The first thing that is along with it is slander may accompany it. Slander may accompany contention. Proverbs 16:28. Maybe I could diagram it better. We're looking at strife up here. And the passages I'm going to put in front of you are going to say, can we go to the roots of this? What kind of person is it that is quarrelsome? Can you get to the root of it? And notice here are one of the roots, 16:28. A perverse man spreads strife. And our first idea, is that 16:28? Yeah, a perverse man spreads strife. And a slanderer separates intimate friends. And so notice down here at the root is a perverse man. It's the kind of person that would spread strife, who would be quarrelsome. Now, the word perverse is really colorful in Hebrew. It says this, a man of upside down. What does that mean? The one who spread strife is a man of upside down. The expression being a man of upside down simply means he twists everything. And our version has given us the word perverse. You see, the idea of being upside down is nothing is like it really is. You get everything twisted and everything turned around. And therefore, notice that a man who twists facts is going to be ultimately a strife spreader. And stop and think about that. Isn't that true? If a person would take facts, let's suppose, and here you have in the last part, a slanderer separates intimate friends. So you got three people here. You've got the man who twists things, and you've got two good friends. And the man who twists things says to friend A, I thought you were meeting your friend for lunch today. And friend A says, yes, I was, but they had a change in plans. And the perverse man who twists things take the words change in plans and says, yeah, they're not very dependable, are they? And he believes he's got evidence. After all, they changed their mind, didn't they? Well, they're not very dependable. And what has he done? He has planted the first seed that could ultimately, if he keeps with it, separate intimate friends. And how does he do it? By using facts with a twist. Perhaps the real truth of the matter is that the change of plans was a very legitimate thing. And maybe the friend had never even thought about, well, they had a change in plans, that's fine, I understand, I don't have to know why. But the one that likes to twist things, they will tell you why. And they will point out it is because they're not dependable. And that ultimately is a very bad thing because it separates friends. By the way, looking in verse 16:28, where it says a perverse man spreads strife. That is a really colorful verb. Go over to Judges 15:4, just to show you how colorful it is. Judges 15:4. We're looking at the word spreads. Keep in mind, it is always possible to take true facts and give them an evil twist. That can always be done. It says, Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches and turned the foxes tail to tail and put one torch in the middle between two tails. And when it's, you see what's going to come up here? He's going to send these foxes out into the Philistine fields to burn them down. And it says in verse 5, when he had set fire to the torches, he released the foxes into the standing grain of the Philistines, thus burning up both the shocks and the standing grain along with the vineyards and the groves. And notice back at verse 5, it says he released the foxes. I wonder if Proverbs had in mind this incident when in chapter 16, verse 28, he says the perverse man, and he says, what does he do with strife? And maybe his mind goes back to the time Samson lit the fire of the Philistines with these 400 foxes, and you can see them running through the fields, burning down the fields of the Philistines, and the author of Proverbs says, I think I'll use that verb here, because that is what the man who twists facts can do with his strife. So what then is behind the strife, the quarrels, the disputes here, a man who twists truth? And as a devastating result, close friends can be separated. However, that's not too bad, because you can always patch it up with a friend, can't you? No, go over to chapter 18 and verse 19. It's a very sobering thing. Have you ever stopped to think when you see two people who are friends and you say something derogatory or critical of one of them in the presence of the other, you may have begun a process of separating friends that can never be reversed? I don't know whether you've ever experienced, perhaps, having a friend. And you look back over the years and that friendship fell apart because we allowed someone to destroy it. This kind of person. Remember, these are not freaks. They live in Kansas City. Some of them even go to church in Kansas City. Some of them even go to church north of the river. And some of them are even in Beth Haven. And some of them are us. Okay? These are all tendency, all things that come out of the sin nature of anybody. Okay, Proverbs 18 and verse 19 says, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. Now notice here, we're dealing with a close friend. It does not say in verse 19, a neighbor offended. Not even does it say a friend is offended, though they're the same word. It does say a brother. And a brother is used for a very intimate, close friend. So an intimate friend offended is harder to be won than a strong city. Have you ever noticed this? When the closer a friendship has been, if it gets destroyed, it's much more bitter than if a casual relationship is changed. And maybe you've experienced that, having a very intimate friendship, and for some reason it fell apart. And seems like the bitterness that comes out of that can be far worse than the other. And notice he is pointing out also in verse 19 that there is almost impossible to ever get this back together again. A brother offended is like, harder to be won than a strong city. And contentions, or quarrels, it's our word, quarrels are like bars of a castle. So he's saying you can get a quarrel started with a friend and you can destroy something that can never, never be put back together. Even when you say, I'm sorry, which we ought to do if that happens. But nonetheless, something often has been... We tend to think that I'm sorry can heal everything. And very often, I'm sorry, the other person can respond and forgive, but what have you done? You have left a wound, and that wound can be there forever, and no amount of apologizing and no amount of sincere apology can ever deal with the scar that is left there. Cut your hand with a knife, and it heals, but the scar is still there. Can you do that emotionally? Can you do that to a friend? You certainly can, and the thing can never, never be put back together again as it was. All right? Strife can be, perverseness can be at the bottom of it. Second, can you think of some of these qualities? What else might be at the root of a person that is contentious and likes to get in fights? Well, here's another flag to know what a person like that might be. Arrogance can be at the root of strife. Arrogance can be at the root of strife. Proverbs 28:25. Proverbs does a rather thorough job at giving us the root of strife. It says, an arrogant man. And again, the Hebrew is colorful here. It says, a man who has a wide soul. What in the world would a wide soul mean? We've got it in English. Have you ever talked about a what head? A wide head or a what? Fat head. So he is simply saying a fat head can be at the root of strife. Now, in verse 25, a man with a fat head stirs up fights and strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. So notice, arrogance can be at the root of it. Another root can be anger. A person who is angry can also be a person who is very quarrelsome. Proverbs 29:22. Notice we're talking about roots here. An angry man stirs up strife or quarrels, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. Notice this does give us the advantage. If we can see these characteristics before, we can recognize that this could very well be the kind of person that will cause great strife. Anger can be at the root of it. Also, hot temper can be at the root of it. And I believe we've already had that under the idea of temper, but let's look at it. Proverbs 15:18, look at it from the standpoint of it being the root of something, strife. Notice the kind of person that is likely to produce it. Proverbs 15 and verse 18. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife. And then finally, Proverbs 6, perversity can be at the root of a person who stirs up strife. Chapter 6, verse 14. These are all roots of contention. Chapter 6 and verse 14. And I don't know what the word perversity might convey to you in English, but I do know that the Hebrew word refers to a person whose thoughts and actions are all wrong, for whatever reason. They're motivated wrong, they don't think right, they don't act right. And so who, verse 14, with perversity in his heart, devises evil continually, who spreads strife. And so notice, these are all marks of character that ought to say this can be potentially a person who is going to spread strife. All right, now, what do we do? Or how do we deal with a contentious person? So let's put down dealing with contention. And again, under the word contention, the word dispute, disagreeable, creating disputes and creating quarrels. Chapter 22, verse 10. And the verse is going to say, we must banish the contentious. We must banish the contentious. Chapter 22 and verse 10. Drive out the scoffer, and contention will go out. Notice here, the scoffer, and we'll deal with him. I think we've got time enough to deal with him tonight. The scoffer basically is a person that refuses all restraint. He is the one character in the book of Proverbs that is the closest to being hopeless. Proverbs doesn't hold out much hope for a scoffer. It doesn't say help the scoffer. It says drive him out. Drive out the scoffer and contention will go out. Notice here something very important that is involved. Disagreement here, does it come from the facts of the situation or the kind of person that's in the situation? Which does it come from? Does the disagreement involved in contention, is it a matter of straightening out facts? Will that solve it? Or they've got to say, let's get together and solve our quarrels by looking at the facts and getting this thing all straight. Is that the root of the problem? You ever see some problems where no matter how much you try to straighten them out and get the facts all put together, you still have contention? You still got a quarrel? Why? Quarrels are not rooted in disagreements over facts. Quarrels are rooted in people with wrong attitudes. And notice, you drive out the scoffer, that's the person, and what will you have dealt with? You'll have dealt with the quarrel. So the emphasis, which is very strong here, disagreement many times does not come from the facts of the situation, but from the wrong attitude of the person. And notice, this also points out that there are some people that we ought to isolate. Sometimes the necessary solution is expulsion. Second thing we can do with a quarrel is we can starve it. Quarrels can be starved. And the metaphor used by Proverbs is going to be this. You can't have a fire without fuel. And the fire is the quarrel, and if you take away the fire and don't give it any fuel, you can't have the fire. And that is stated in Proverbs 26, verse 20. Starve it. I love the metaphors of Proverbs. They're so colorful, and they come across so clearly. Isn't this simple? For lack of wood, the fire goes out. That is so simple. Take away the fuel, and the fire goes out. It's chapter 26, verse 20. Now, what's the analogy? Where there is no whisperer, the quarrel quiets down. What are we going to do? We're supposed to starve it today. Just shut up. Which is the hardest thing in the world to do, is it not? And verse 21, like charcoal to hot timbers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. And notice, he is a man who is a man of that character that is there. So what can we do then to deal with contention? Sometimes banishment of the one who is being contentious, and I take it this is within a group, quarrelsome and causing problems, has to be expelled. And on the personal level, just a simple thing, you can't have a fire without fuel. And if we would only remember that, when we pass on information about people, stop and remind ourselves, am I lighting a fire? Am I giving a potential for a quarrel here? And if I would keep my mouth shut, I am keeping from putting fuel on the fire. Very difficult thing to do many times, but it is important. So let's put the contentious man fashions facts into fuel for a fight. He transforms, fashions facts into fuel for a fight. And if you're of that disposition, anyone sitting here can destroy a friendship like that. Let me ask you this. Have you ever heard... picture two people that are friends, and you know both of them. And one of them has told you confidentially something about that person that they don't like, and now you've got some fuel in your hands. And what can you do with it if you want? You can go to that person and say, you know what your friend said about you? And you've just destroyed a friendship. That is the kind of nastiness that the book of Proverbs is talking about under this type of contentious person. Now, since we've looked here at the scoffer, let's take a look in the last 10-15 minutes of what a scoffer is like. So let's look at a portrait of a scoffer. And again, I'm only putting these Hebrew words here for the sake of the people that are taking Hebrew. Maybe they want to improve
get the vocabulary words with these words. Lates. Lamath Tzade. Portrait of a scoffer. This scoffer occurs 15 times in Proverbs, so he is a character that crosses the scene frequently. 15 times, and he is handled two ways in every passage. Number one, he is contrasted to the wise. It's the first way he is handled. We'll see him in passages where he is contrasted to the wise. And second, he is coupled to the fool. So we'll see him contrasted and we see him coupled. We will see, look how much like a fool he is. And we'll see, look how much he contrasts the wise. And that's the way it will be used throughout the book of Proverbs. And I'm supposed to have a B for my outline, but I don't have one, so B is no point. Two. Okay. I've been plagued with that all my life. I had a teacher in high school that was just adamant. If you had a 1, you got to have a 2. And if you got an A, you can't have 1 with an A under it and then start with a 2. You got to have an A and a B. Even if the B makes no sense whatsoever, you got to have 2 points. And so that's a reflection of that. Okay, now how do we know him? What about his character? What is he like? And let's look at him, number one, in relationship. We'll look at him in relationship. Relationship to himself. This guy's pitiful. It's the one character in Proverbs that, and I'm sure he could recover from being a scoffer, but I sure would hate to depend on the information in Proverbs about myself if I were a scoffer and try to have any encouragement that I could ever reform, because he seems to be the one irreformable character in the book of Proverbs. In relationship to himself, and this is probably why you can't reform him, one of the characteristics of a scoffer, and a scoffer is a person who... He will not submit to truth. He just will not do it. He refuses to do it. And one of his characteristics is scoffers love their condition. He loves his condition. He likes to scoff at truth. He likes to say, I won't bend. He may not put it in those words, but he's in love with being a scoffer. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 22. Keep in mind, it is possible by bad choices to arrive at a condition, and at first we don't like that condition, but with the passage of time we fall in love with it. And the scoffer very well is one of the people in Proverbs that by bad choices in life and bad responses to truth, he becomes a scoffer. And he may not really like that, but one day he decides, I've fallen in love with my scofferhood. So chapter 1, verse 22. The lament here is, how long, O naive ones, will you love simplicity? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing. He loves his condition. That may be the thing that makes him the character we can't solve in Proverbs, because he's in love with his condition. It's very, very... One point of encouragement is, if you look at some of these Proverbs and you say, well, hey, that's me, and I'm seeing myself all the time in these Proverbs, but the encouraging thing about it is, I don't like it. I don't love it. And would like to see the change, but I'm not ready yet. Okay, he loves his condition. Okay, he lacks moral principle. Second, in relationship to himself, he never finds wisdom. He never finds wisdom. He can't. He never finds wisdom. Now, keep in mind under this, it doesn't mean he isn't brilliant. There are many brilliant scoffers, but he can't find wisdom. He never can put it together. And let's notice that he never finds wisdom in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 6. When we talk about a scoffer, I'm not talking about a dunce. He might be a keen thinker. He might be brilliant, but he never gets to wisdom. Brilliant, but he never has any sense in the true sense of the word. So notice he pursues, it says in verse 6 of chapter 14, a scoffer seeks wisdom and finds none. You know why? You ought to know why. What's the theme verse of Proverbs? Chapter 1, verse 7. What is the beginning of wisdom? fear or respect for the Lord. And since he's a scoffer, he refuses to submit to the authority of the Lord and bow his mind to his lordship, and therefore, does he seek wisdom? He goes all over the place. He can't find it. Because the very first rule of the game on following wisdom is to respect the authority of the Lord. Consequently, he never finds it. All right? Third, in relationship to himself, he is pictured as aggressively insolent. Aggressively insolent. Pictures him. And we've got that in Proverbs 21:24. Now we're going to find out in closing that the person who would not submit to the authority of the Lord, or this insolent person, is going to meet in the last analysis the most beautiful poetic justice that you've ever seen. I think it's the most beautiful, not beautiful, but the most, what would you say? Yeah, beautiful, I guess, that you find in the book of Proverbs, chapter 21, verse 24. Notice, he is so much a scoffer that he earns the name. Proud, haughty, scoffer are his names, who acts with insolent pride. What is insolent pride? Insolent pride means I will not submit to the authority of the Lord. So first, then, in relationship to himself. Now, second, in relationship to discipline. And this is the big thing with him. The one thing that the scoffer can't handle is discipline, his relationship to discipline. And if there's one thing he will not tolerate, it is discipline. All right, Proverbs 13 and verse 1. It says, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge. No, 13:1. A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Why do you think the wise son is set side by side with the scoffer? Isn't there an implication that if you cannot respond to home truths of your father, that you're well on the road to being a scoffer? And notice there, he does not listen to rebuke. One other passage, chapter 15 and verse 12. He will not change. He refuses all the opportunities. 15:12 says, a scoffer does not love one who reproves him. He will not go to the wise. Notice how incorrigible he was. He refuses all opportunities to change. And then finally, he is treated as nearly hopeless, chapter 9 and verse 8. Notice how he's treated as almost hopeless. Chapter 9, verse 8. Says, do not reprove a scoffer. It simply means don't even try to help him. Lest he hate you, reprove, on the other hand, a wise man, and he will love you. So notice, he is almost incurable. Finally, and in closing, his relationship to God. And we'll say two things about that. Number one, there's a judgment prepared for the scoffer. Proverbs 19:29. Judgments are prepared for scoffers and blows for the back of fools. Notice the only thing that awaits him is judgment. Now, in closing out, let me ask you a question. What do you think would be the appropriate judgment for a scoffer, one who will not submit to the authority of the Lord? What would be appropriate for him? Now, you could look at it from the human standpoint and say, well, let's give him a dose of his own medicine. He's a scoffer. Let's scoff him. But God wouldn't do that. No, God wouldn't do that. Chapter 3, verse 34. Chapter 3, rather, verse 32. And my answer to that question, he wouldn't. Chapter 3, verse 32. The scoffer's final end is his own medicine. Verse 32. For the crooked man is an abomination to the Lord, but he, the Lord, is intimate with the upright. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he, the Lord, blesses the dwelling of the righteous, though he, the Lord, scoffs at the scoffers. And so the final end of the scoffer is his own medicine, delivered not by man, but by God. Father, we're thankful today for your word and truth. We pray that we will learn and meditate on the things we have been taught today. May we recognize that these are proverbs. They need to be meditated upon, thought about, and reflected upon. And we pray that as we proceed throughout our week, that we, with these things in mind, will begin to live lives that are more in line with Christ-likeness and reflect your word. In Christ's name, amen.